Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. Or you can go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives. And secondarily, because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, we'd appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I can turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. If you would like to get a comment or a question, but you do not want to call in live or you do not have that ability, you can send us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you, we will address it on the internet show and then, as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And as I like to say, we greatly appreciate when anybody chooses to do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work when we get some feedback about how are these things landing for you, what's working best for you, what would you like us to do more of, et cetera. So, as I like to remind people, even if it seems like I'm in the middle of reading something or on a monologue, we still encourage people to call in and press 1 on your phone, and add your energy, add your feedback and input so that we can have an easier time being of service. One of the things we're doing this year is we're working our way through the Way of Mastery again, and we're going what I would consider slowly and carefully, what some people might consider pedantic, but the value in this work does not come from just reading the work. It comes from applying these exercises and observations in your daily life. And that's another thing we encourage people to do. If you're taking the time to do the exercises that the Way of Mastery recommends, and or if you're seeing any shift or change or benefit from that, we greatly appreciate when somebody calls in to let us know, giving a testimonial about how the work from the Way of Mastery or the work from the Reality Management Worksheet or the Mind Shifter Targeted Journaling Tool is making a difference in their lives. So we had our support group last night, and we listened to the most recent podcast from Michael Singer, which was posted in January. And it did just what it was intended to do. It stirred up the pot. So it was the grist for the mill for quite a few people to get triggered, to have counter opinions, to question the validity of the work, etc. And that's all we're after, is just get people to be willing to look at their own life differently. If there's anything about your life that you currently are experiencing that you don't like, the core bottom line observation number one is, if whatever I'm doing isn't working, I should feel free to try something else. And that is exactly what the Way of Mastery was calling us to do in Lesson 14, where it says the Way of Transformation is based upon the idea of using time differently. Are you willing to actually change what you're doing? Because if you're not willing to change what you're doing, and in this work they state very clearly that it is the choices we make that create our experience of life, and we never experience anything except the results of what we've chosen, then if we're not willing to change what we're choosing and do something differently, there's no possibility anywhere in the universe for us to have a different experience. Because at its core, this work teaches us and begins to show us how, over and over again, we are creating our experience of life moment to moment. And we're doing that by how we're choosing to interpret and respond to the life events that unfold around us. And if there's anything about that that seems counter to what you've been raised with or what you've been taught, let's talk about it. Let's see how your direct observations can be pointed in a different way, away from teaching, away from dogma, away from belief system, and toward direct, wide open, eyes wide open experience of life moment to moment. And if you're willing to step into that, we are here to support you in doing it and discuss what benefits you're getting or what the results are, the consequences might be of doing what to our Western culture is antithetical. It's the opposite of what we're taught. We're taught to believe certain things. We're taught to fight and die for our beliefs. We're taught to parrot back to our teachers what they have spit at us and made us copy down in our notes. We are not taught critical thinking, and we are not taught living from direct observation. So, again, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you have anything to share with us, please give that number a call and press 1 on your phone, and we can have a conversation. One of the things that I bring up regularly on this internet show is different podcasts and books that I listen to, and one of the podcasts that's been very fruitful for me over the past few years is the Glennon Doyle podcast titled We Can Do Hard Things. And the podcast they posted yesterday was with Dr. Blasey Ford, and you might remember her as the person who came out during the Judge Kavanaugh hearings as they were trying to railroad him through for the Supreme Court, despite the fact that Dr. Ford had been assaulted by him in her college years. I can't remember if it was college or high school, but anyway, it's in that range of life. And she summoned up more courage and fortitude than most people will ever imagine and testified in front of the congressional committees and has suffered for it ever since. Just telling the story as she experienced it about the sexual assault that she experienced. So yesterday, they interviewed Dr. Ford, and I just highly recommend it because it's a very useful reminder of how the system that we are living under works and how it raises a whole bunch of really good questions for each of us individually about what we're willing to stand up for and the sacrifices we make when we do that. And then as a follow-up, I mean, that was so moving for the three interviewers that they posted another one today where Glennon and Amanda, the two sisters, are giving their debriefing of that. And I haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, but I'm imagining it's going to be powerful as well. But if you don't remember what happened with Dr. Christine Blasey Ford and the Justice Kavanaugh hearings for the Supreme Court, this is a really good way to start a quick refresher and maybe light a fire under you to either read Dr. Blasey Ford's new book or go back and do your research about that part of our history and what it indicates about the system we have and how it works. And again, if you know somebody that you think I should interview or would be a good participant on one of these Mind Shifter radio shows, please submit that to me. Either call in and suggest it or send me an email. And I'll follow up on it and do what I can to see if I can secure an interview, either for the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream, or as we did with Dr. Gruder and Lori Morris, as an active participant on the Mind Shifter radio show. So, give us a call and let us know your thoughts. The new book by Dr. Ford is One Way Back, a memoir. So, I'm looking forward to reading that or listening to it through the Audible. And my hope is that a number of other people in this community will also do the same, and it'll spark some commentary and questions and discussion for us. Where we left off with the Way of Mastery was that we had finished once again reading through Lesson 14. And Lesson 15 comes back to basics and is titled, Love or Fear, the Choice is Yours. And the text reads, We come forth with great joy to abide with you, to share our love for you, to share our love with you, to be in celebration that we are of but one mind and one heart. For those who choose to release all illusions and journey to the heart of creation, there can only be oneness, brotherhood, sisterhood eternally. And there can only be one purpose and one goal. There can only be Christ expressing the mind of creation. Therefore, indeed, it is with great joy that we come forth to abide with you in this particular lesson. We would ask that you set aside the roar and the din of the world and to simply hold the thought in the mind for just the briefest of moments. Hold the thought that right now you need not be concerned for anything. The world you have dreamt into being, and you did that simply to experience it, that world can be placed upon a shelf. And that in this now moment, there is simply this experience. So the invitation is to focus on your willingness to prepare a place for us so that you might hear these subtle vibrations translated as thoughts into the words that are spoken, that are being translated into electronic signals that are captured and transmitted to your ear so that it can direct your heart toward the soul, that it can direct the soul toward the spirit, and that can direct the spirit into awakening fully, totally, completely as the presence of the thought of love, capital L love, in form. For this is what you are made to be. You are the extension of love expressing in form. And this is what you are eternally, regardless of the vibrations of thoughts that you allow to make a home in your mind temporarily. Now that line, I cannot even begin to tell you how many times I say that line within a given week or month to the people in my caseload. Running around with a very active negative self-talk mechanism. Guy Finley calls it the mechanical level of mind. Michael Singer talks about it in his book, The Untethered Soul. He says, most of us have so much negativity going on in our minds that if we had a transcript of that negative self-talk, and we gave it to one of our best friends and asked them to follow us around and just read it to us throughout the day, we would kick them out of our lives before noon. We would not tolerate anybody talking to us the way our own self-talk does. And I've talked about this before, and it's worth mentioning that they did a social experiment where they closed a high-end women's clothing store. And while it was closed, they redid all the tags on the clothing items. And then when they opened up the store again, they had cameras going. And they watched the reaction of women who would look at a piece of clothing and then they would, you know, get attracted to it and they'd go and grab the tag and read. And instead of a price on the tag would say something like, what are you doing looking at this? You're too old to wear something like this. This would make your rear end look fat, et cetera, et cetera. All of these disgusting negative statements. And the cameras caught the anger, the frustration, the righteous indignation on the face of these customers. And then a store clerk would come over, a salesperson would come over and say, what's the matter? What's the matter? And the customer would start complaining about the content of the tag. And the store clerk would say, oh, I'm so sorry. That's just what I say to myself when I look at these things. And all the anger would leave the customer, and or they would start crying because the shared experience of the negative self-talk is so pervasive. And yet it's so nasty that if we ever heard that kind of thing from somebody else, we want to fight them. And I'm routinely telling people in my caseload, when you have, it's woven into the bottom line observations. One of them says, if I have a negative thought about myself or someone else or a negative emotion active in my mind, I can instantly know three things. The first thing is it's a lie or it's based in a falsehood. The second thing is it's not about the present moment. This is an old tape playing. This is Guy Finley's mechanical level of mind that's been resonated in activity. This is Michael Rice's the automatic decision process that's just been resonated in activity. And right here, in the Way of Mastery, Lesson 15, it says, you are the extension of love in form. You are the presence of the thought of love in form. And this is what you're made to be, and this is what you are eternally, regardless of the vibrations of thoughts that you allow to make a home in your mind temporarily, all those negative thoughts. Another one of the reminders that I've given people comes out of the poem If by Rudyard Kipling. And the way I state it is, your successes and failures in any area do not increase or decrease your value as a person. It's just a thought. It doesn't change your true nature. As the Way of Mastery says in a variety of different ways and places, you are loved, loving, and lovable forever. You remain as your Creator created you to be. You and your Creator are one. So it points out that these negative thoughts you have about yourself that you've allowed to make a home in your mind temporarily have nothing to do with your true nature. Your true nature can't be chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way, ever. The text then goes on and says, you have a term in your legal system called temporary insanity. The lawyer says, quote, my client is not guilty. It was just temporary insanity, close quotes. Rest assured, that is exactly how it is in the cosmic dimensions of your being. Your Creator knows that given perfectly free will, you have elected at times to be temporarily insane. Knowing this, no judgment has been passed. You have never been made wrong by your Creator. This earlier in a previous lesson, they said, listen, when you're feeling out of sorts, sit in your chair, remember your true nature, and then open the phone book and pick a number at random and call that person and remind them that they're never been made wrong by their Creator, that they've never been judged, that they remain perfectly innocent. Now, why would I be given an exercise to tell that to somebody else? So that I hear it myself. See one, do one, T teach one, and then that thing becomes yours. You can read this and hear this. You can try it yourself, but you teach this to somebody else, and it's going to sink into you at a deeper level. You've never been made wrong by your creator. You've never failed to create and attract precisely those most beautiful lessons that have triggered for you what you most need to learn and what you most need to feel. In each moment, you exist in an exquisite perfection of your own making and your own collaboration with another. You, therefore, beloved friends, are already as I am, or as Yeshua is. We merely work together to restore to your mind what the Creator has placed there since before the beginning of time. We work together in joy and in innocence and in perfect simplicity to recall, to remember what is always true. And then we work together to explore the expansion of that truth beyond the boundaries of every fearful thought, beyond the limitations of every egoic perception, beyond even the body itself, which can only be a temporary communication device usable only within the very thin slice of creation that you call the physical world. Beloved friends, the way of transformation does indeed require your commitment. Where you feel that your commitment has wavered, and when you become aware of it, simply choose anew. And the end of the journey must be perfectly certain. For as you have created your journey away from the Creator, away from your awareness of your true nature, connecting, and your connection to your source, and you've done that within your imagination, so too do you imagine or bring into the form of images the very pathway that returns you to awareness of your true reality. We now embark upon the next lesson and study period, in which you have the choice to become fully committed to heeding every word, to letting the vibration brought forth by the word settle ever more deeply into the nervous system of the body. And as it settles, likewise, let it settle into the depth of your mind and your heart. Therefore, fear not, for you are the creator of your journey home. You are the creator of all you perceive. You are the one given infinite power of the mind of the Creator to see through the eyes of capital L love, to rest in perfect safety, and to embrace all that comes to you in the simple actuality that you've called it to you. Perhaps you've called it to you as a challenge, but always as an opportunity to expand your commitment to capital L love. And where love is chosen so that you want nothing else, you will see nothing else but a lovely world, infinite in dimension, sparkling in clarity, radiant in beauty. You will look upon it and you will say, behold, this is the truth of life. The book says, behold, it is very good. I'm choosing to reframe that as the truth of life, so we aren't mistaken into believing that it's about judging. It's just about acknowledging the truth of the life that we're living. We create our own perception. We create a fantasy of being separate from our Creator. And we're free to create anew We're free to choose again every time we have an experience that we do not like. Again, it's right back to basics that they teach us in the first lesson on the fifth page of this book. The first axiom, it says, if you want to awaken, if you truly want to have a different experience of life, the first step in awakening is just allow this thought into your mind, this axiom of truth. Quote, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Not the choice of your conscious logical mind, but the choice of your capital S self, your soul, your awakened heart. And the invitation, a little bit lower on that page, is that you step out of the practice of engaging the world through the common user interface of your intellect and trying to figure everything out, and you step into the world of interfacing with the world through the user interface of your wide open heart. The heart is that which feels all things. There's no denial and suppression in this. The heart embraces all things. The heart trusts all things. The heart allows all things. The heart is that in which your soul rests eternally. The heart is that which is beyond space and time. And the heart is the spark of light in the mind of the Creator, which some have called Christ. And there is constant, instant, eternal peace when you are aware of that. So the last paragraph I read there was, where you choose love so that you want nothing else, you will see nothing else but a lovely world, infinite dimension, sparkling in clarity, radiant in beauty. And you will look upon it and you will see it as the capital T truth of existence. The next section is titled, A Meditation to Attune to the Will and Love of the Creator. And it says, in this lesson, we wish to introduce a methodology for what you might call meditation. It is a form of communion or meditation that was initially and essentially taught to me by several of my friends that you know as disciples, one of which carried this specific form of teaching and preserved it. I misread that. It said taught to me by these friends. It says I taught this, taught by me to these disciples. And one of them carried this specific teaching and preserved it. Now, please know, this teaching did not originate with me. I merely refined it, says Yeshua in this book. For like you, I was once a student of the ways of seeking the Creator, and I dove deep into the nature of consciousness and mind itself, and I discovered how to attune the mind, to tune the emotions, and even the nervous system of the body to resonate with the perfect will and love of the Creator. To begin to prepare a place for that teaching for the next 30 days, return to the practice of abiding as Christ for at least 5 minutes. Then, as that 5-minute practice period is completed, allow your eyes to close. Become aware of the simple movement of your own breathing. That is, just become aware of it. Don't try and change it or force it into a particular pattern, and simply hold the thought, I allow this breath to move more deeply and slowly. And then, as you're beginning to feel that sense of relaxation ever more deeply, hold the thought, as Christ, in perfect safety, I release all tension. As Christ, in perfect safety, I dissolve my mind in the perfect peace of the Creator. And then merely continue in this manner. As the breath comes to fill the body, gently merely say the words, I accept. And as the breath leaves the body, gently say within your mind, the love of creation. And again, as the breath enters the body, you say silently in your mind, I accept. And as it leaves the body, you say silently in the mind, the love of the Creator. Continue in this manner for about 5 minutes, regardless of what the egoic mind says to you. And believe me, it will kick up quite a storm. Simply return to this simple practice. On the inhale, say silently in your mind, I accept. As the exhale leaves, say silently in your mind, the love of the Creator. At the end of about 5 minutes, let the prayer that you've been offering change from words to energy. You might perceive it as a golden white light. You might feel it as a gentle flow of relaxation. Whatever it is fine. Continue gently to breathe that quality or that color into yourself with each breath. With each letting go of the breath, imagine and feel that that energy is moving throughout the course of the body as though it were extending like a gentle breeze beyond the boundaries of the body. Again, if your egoic mind kicks up its heels and you start thinking of all the multitude of things that you, quote, ought, close quotes, to be doing, simply return to the prayer. For all prayer is nothing more than a chance and a choice to abide and to contemplate and to rest in communion beyond egoic thought. Prayer is not asking for stuff. Prayer is a choice to abide and contemplate and rest in communion beyond the egoic thought. And then after about another 5 minutes, say within the mind, as Christ, I have celebrated in this manner the capital T truth of who I am, and I bring peace to the world today. Allow this practice period to occur in the morning of your day and then again at the evening. The only difference will be that at the end of the day, when you're wrapping it up, you say, this day I have brought peace to the world and offered it to my companions. That should be clear enough and simple enough for you to begin. In the beginning, you may wish to refer back to the words of the meditation and use it as a guide for a period of time until it seems more comfortable for you to do this on your own. Those that embark on this simple process will be well prepared for what is to come in the lessons that follow. And of course, the implication is, if you choose not to do this, you won't get as much from the lessons that follow. And that's okay too. As we've tried to talk about in this work, there's a very specific statement where it says, get yourself a transformation journal. Use it for nothing other than this practice. Get a pen that you use for nothing but this practice. And then make notes about these exercises. And then it says very specifically, even if you read an exercise and you say, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm going to choose to just let that go. I have other ways that I'm going to be living my life in these next few minutes, weeks, months, years? Allow yourself to understand the truth of what they're saying. You choose. And whatever you choose is the way you create your path. And whatever path you create is perfectly okay. In ways that you're not going to be able to track with your conscious logical mind, it's going to be just what you need to stir things up, to see which things get stirred up that you need to release, to awaken you to different ways for you to heal and move forward. It is absolutely okay for you to choose to do these exercises or choose not to do these exercises. The world's not going to end. No horrible things are going to befall your friends and family members if you don't do these exercises as they're laid out. You have free will choice. And if you didn't have free will choice, then there would be things that you would need to do. And yet this work tells us over and over again, you need do nothing. You're already whole and complete just as you are. There's a tremendous amount of life going on all the time. And it is not demolished by what you choose, just as your life is not ruined by what someone else chooses. You're free to choose, they're free to choose. And as this work tells us over and over again, go ahead and choose to do these exercises, go ahead and choose for love, or continue to choose for anger and fear. We will remain loving and peaceful and ready to welcome you with open arms whenever you choose to remember your true nature. And the more I read a book like this, the more it strengthens my choice to just walk away from people that say, you better get going, you better get off your duff, you better get moving, crisis is coming, and look out, it's all going to fall apart. Because those kinds of statements, those kinds of threats and comments, to my experience, only engender fear. And the core of these deep teachings say over and over again, fear not. Fear is a false creation. It is an attempt to substitute something, your own thoughts and beliefs, in place of what creation has offered, in place of the truth of life. So that's why this very lesson, lesson 15, is titled, Love or Fear, the Choice is Yours. And whatever you choose has consequences, and that's okay. You'll be able to deal with the consequences. You'll deal with them now or you'll deal with them later. Please understand that only a few places in this book do they even hint at anything that sounds like a threat. And it's just a hint. And most of it is you're fine just the way you are, and very explicit statements about choose to do this or not, that's perfectly okay. We will remain here loving and peaceful and ready to welcome you with open arms whenever you may choose for love over fear. Please remember, you're free to call in 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone, even if I'm in the middle of reading. The next section is titled, The Only Energy That Can Separate You from the Kingdom. Any guesses? Yep, you guessed it. It's fear. The text reads, Beloved friends, the world that you look upon is not real. It has never been real. It will never be real. It is a creation that can be impregnated with the perfect love of creation. Remember always that there is only love or contraction away from love, which we call fear. What is not love, capital L love, can only be fear. And what is not love is never justified. That's a tough pill to swallow for most of us, because most of us have been trained, you might say brainwashed, you might say conditioned, to believe that our rationalizations about our anger, our fear, our bitterness, our hurt are absolutely justified. But it said the same thing in Lesson 3 where it says, it doesn't mean you're not going to feel anger, but please stop kidding yourself into thinking it's justified. Anger is not justified. Anger is best used as an alarm system to let you know that your thoughts are off the mark, that you've moved away from love into judgment, that you've created a perception about something that's inaccurate, that misses the point that we're all connected and that the truth of your nature can never be chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way, that you are perfectly safe in each and every present moment. You, your essence, not necessarily your body, not necessarily your house, not necessarily the possessions that you prize above everything else, and yet you, your essence, the ability to be aware, will never end or be damaged in any way. The text goes on and says, the world you have made is thoroughly harmless. The world that you experience, which is the world that you have made in conjunction with others in any given moment, it offers to you the opportunity to choose to impregnate it with capital L love, or to allow it to reflect to you your fearful thoughts. The choice is yours in each moment. You are not limited at any time. And in you, all power under heaven and earth is given. I think every time I read this now, I think about Roger McGowan sitting on a death row cell in Texas for something he didn't commit, who's choosing for love, who's become a spiritual teacher despite living in an abusive situation. Every moment, he recognizes he's not limited. And it doesn't mean he's never gotten angry or upset. It just means that he understands that's not the truth. And when he goes into anger or upset, or he gives into the pain or fear or sadness or frustration, and he recognizes that's what he's done, then he steps back and he chooses again. Lesson is telling us we can do that as well. Every one of us can do that. And that's our invitation, to recognize that the world we're seeing is not the truth of life. It is what we have created with our thoughts and perceptions, what we've created with our intellect that's been shoved full of trivialities by our family and our culture and our language. And you have all power under heaven and earth. You are not limited at any time. You can choose for love in any given circumstance. The text goes on and says, you have a phrase in your world. And the phrase is this, quote, there is nothing to fear but fear itself, close quotes. The text reads, that is 98% accurate. Fear is the only energy that can separate you from the kingdom. And fear is never justified in any moment. If you want to start an argument in a bar, in a party where there is no alcohol, you want to start an argument in your family of origin, just try on that statement. Try and convince people that fear is never justified in any moment. So if fear is never justified in any moment, why is that only 98% accurate? The text says, the final 2% would be to say that there is nothing to fear, since fear is only a temporary insanity. And your right-mindedness is but a choice away. Love or fear, the choice is yours. That's the title of the lesson. The last 2% to add on to the 98% is to recognize that whenever I am experiencing fear, it's an old tape playing, it's a lie or based on a falsehood, and if I sit and spin thinking about it, if I speak or act from it, I'm only going to make my life worse. It's akin to throwing garbage on the buffet table right before dinner. It does not enhance the dining experience. This is just a temporary insanity, and your right-mindedness is but a choice away. What's that choice? Choose for love over fear. The text goes on and says, therefore, the invitation here is to begin to look upon each situation, each moment or minute of your life, as a very separate scene in a movie. It has a certain set of characters. It has a beginning and it has an end. Although you are eternal, the things of time are not. And all things birthed in time, in time will end in time. Therefore, the question is, will you use the moment birthed in time to bring to it what is eternal? Or will you continue to believe that yet within you there is no possible power to choose love over fear? The invitation is to look around you and just notice what your eyes see. Would you bless it or curse it? What would you teach yourself and therefore make true for you? The message of this lesson is being given slowly, deliberately, and carefully. For we want you to make no mistake in what is being shared, both in terms of practice and in theory. Theory is important in your world, for it is only through theory that the mind, the little part of you that is arrogant, that part will ever decide whether to value what the theory offers. And when you've placed value upon what the theory offers to you, you're then willing to embark on the practice it requires. I hope this makes sense to you, but all of this teaching is simply about you changing what you do. We have people in the support group from time to time who say, wait a minute, why should I believe this? Why should I have faith in what you're saying? Why should I just blindly follow what you're... And we just try to say over and over again, you shouldn't. You shouldn't believe what we're saying. You shouldn't have blind faith in it. The invitation is not to believe this. The invitation is put these exercises into practice in your life. Try to use time differently in your life, moment to moment, and see whether or not you are able to tap into the power that these teachings tell us each of us have. And are you able to use it to improve your experience of life moment to moment? That's all that matters. The theory doesn't matter. Who's right and wrong doesn't matter. What day or time you choose to awake, the only thing that matters is, how does it feel when you awaken to that power and you use it differently? So please, I don't think we say it enough in this work. Please don't believe anything we say. Just open yourself to exploring, to realizing, to starting with some fundamental observations. The first one is, I don't know everything. This is just a simple observation that I can make. And any honest human being can make the same observation. And the second observation is, well, since I don't know everything, what that means is whatever it is I think I know is either only partially true or perhaps even completely false. If I hold those two observations active in my mind as I go out into my next moment, now there's the possibility for me to learn something new. But if I go into that moment, the next moment, thinking, well, I know what I know, and I know how I learned it and where I learned it, and this is my belief, and this is my religion, and this is my dogma, and this is my God, and this is my X, Y, and Z way of dealing with the world, there is no possibility for me to learn something new in that next moment. Because we have free will. We can shut our minds down. We can choose what we give value to. And that's what the title of this lesson 15 says. Love or fear, the choice is yours. How will you choose? What's going to be important for you? Please question everything. Please hear us say over and over again, the essence of this work, the essence of this invitation is to learn to live your life from direct observation, just the way you would drive your car. You don't drive your car based on belief. You don't drive your car with your eyes closed, fantasizing that the roads are straight and clear, and if you just, and that all the lights are green, and if you just floor it, you'll get home sooner. You wouldn't think of driving your car that way. So please, don't live your life that way. Stay wide awake. Invite yourself into the practice of living from direct observation. Play with this. Practice it. Question it all. And if you do and you have some good experiences, give us a call. Let us know how it's working. Send us an email. Email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or email Jeannie at jeannie@yagain.org or give us a call when we're on live on the show at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. I appreciate you all for being here today. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate
you. You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, March the 20th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And once Michael gets on, I'm going to read an email that we had received. And he'll direct an answer to them. But because of that question and a couple other questions, we've now created another page on the website, and it's the Aramaic translation of the Ho'oponopono. Anyway, it's the four steps that people refer to, but then if you take it from the Aramaic, the difference in rewording it. And so that is now out there. You can find it either just by putting in whyagain.org/ and then Ho'oponopono, or you can go to the website and click on Start Here. And when you scroll down to other worksheets, which is where you find anything but the forgiveness worksheet. So that's where, you know, the codependence, the commitments, and all of that, where they're all located. And then just roll down. They're in alphabetical order. And you'll see the link that will take you to that page. And so we'll give him just another moment to dial in here. If you have any questions, definitely press 1. It puts a hand up, and then we know you want to talk to us. Michael's been going through the Beatitudes and then the definitions in the back of the Enlightenment, and you know, we've stopped along the way to answer questions. Actually got an email from another lady, and she wanted to know if it's okay if she sent a long question. So I have not gotten that one yet, but welcome, Michael. We do have a question from the emails.
Awesome. Let's go for it.
Okay. And it's from a lady in Poland. Her name's Maria. And she said,
"Hi, Maria.
All my teachers, I bow to myself and my mind, my emotions, and my current view of the world for the work that you have done. I use 1 to 3 sheets a day because my emotional state does not allow me to experience more. I have been using meditation at the end of each sheet for 14 days. And she's using the meditation of the sorry, forgive me, thank you, I love you. This makes my 30th day in the desert. Since yesterday, at the point where I had to describe how I wanted to punish the person in worksheet, a place for what he caused in me, at that point I smiled. With all my being and heart, I already understand, and there is nothing left to fix. Does this mean that I am approaching the mirage that is paradise on earth? I don't know. You know more. I am still crying with emotion. I know that I would translate both the worksheet and Michael's book into my native language, which is Polish, because it is a priceless treasure for the people of the world. I still don't know how to put my thoughts into words or how I feel with my whole being. I disappeared into silence, but it's like bathing my soul in light, and I remain alone to touch."
Well, holding the space for you, that's powerful. Thank you for sharing that with us, and that it's having that impact on you. And it'd be wonderful if you would translate the book. It'd be awesome to have the book available in Polish. That would be just fabulous. And as far as the meditation that is referred to as Ho'oponopono, I have some thoughts to share with anybody that's doing that. Actually, we just set up a page on the website for the reply or for our thinking on that Hawaiian process that's offered as forgiveness. And, you know, in the context of first century Aramaic forgiveness, there's some things about the Ho'oponopono that are off base, at least the way that it's thought. And so and some of the reasoning behind that and why I'd suggest that you make some shifts with that. And Jeannie went ahead and sent you a copy of this, but, you know, the "I'm sorry" part, you know, my experience is that people who say "I'm sorry" become sorry people. And so we suggest deleting those words totally from your vocabulary. Like, never say the words "I'm sorry" ever again. And instead, we have what we call the apology tool. And recognize that since words are one of the ways we put energy into creation, sorry is not something that you want to focus on or create from. So the apology tool and the why work includes ownership of the conflict and the error. You know, I made an error. I apologize for my error. And in the future, I will. And into the apology, speak what it is that you're going to do to correct the error. You know, when two people join in mind energy, they strengthen the field of the mind energy of each of them. So, you know, if I tell you what I'm sorry about, of course, I have to focus on or say what I'm sorry about. And if you're going to actually receive it, then you're going to tend to focus on the same thing. So now we have two minds focused on what we're sorry about. Not the best way to change the dynamic of the mind. So you want to speak, along with the apology, the ownership, speak into the creation and your connection with that other person, what the replacement behavior is going to be. The please forgive me idea that's put out there perpetuates the error that I'm supposed to let you off the hook, or you're supposed to let me off the hook for the pain that, if it's present in either of us, is an experience clearly generated from energies held within each of us. So for me to let you off the hook and call that forgiveness means that I will never do my forgiveness work, because I think I've already done it when I said, okay, I let you off the hook. So again, I suggest you delete the words, I forgive you, never say the words again to anybody. If you choose to pardon somebody, great, pardon them. Call it what it is. And then, recognizing that you're responsible for your pain, then step into the actual forgiveness process. But if I think I've already done it, then obviously I'm not going to step into the real forgiveness work. And basically, I've spent the last 40-plus years, bringing the technology of first-century Aramaic forgiveness to the world. And the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop shows precisely how denied, internally generated pain is convincingly projected into our brain's image of another, and how to directly access and remove, that is, forgive the offending energy from one's own mind and body. That's what forgiveness is about. So if I let somebody else off the hook, it's not likely I'm going to now go inside and say, okay, so now I've caused my pain here, and I'm going to get rid of the energy with which I do that. And that's where the real forgiveness work is. So what most of the world calls forgiveness has nothing whatsoever to do with actual forgiveness, but is a Greek substitute, pardoning, again, letting others off the hook. And while that's certainly an okay thing to do, it's not forgiveness, which is a strictly internal act that involves no one but the person doing the forgiveness. Using the words, I forgive you, accomplishes the act of letting the other off the hook, but leaves actual forgiveness undone. And so, and Jeannie will put in the notes, and she sent a link to you, and it's a link to the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, the latest version of it. And that shows how to access and remove those energies that are causing one's pain. And there's also, and I'm sure Gina will be putting this in the notes, there's also a PowerPoint that diagrams the mechanics of forgiveness and what it accomplishes, how it works. And if we listen to Yeshua, he says, the power of life and death is in your words. So 2,000 years ago, what he was telling us is that perception, cellular chemistry, our emotions, and our creative process, everything is regulated by speech. Power of life and death. Vladimir Lenin, the man responsible for more deaths on planet Earth than probably anybody in history, said the way to destroy a culture is by changing the meaning of its words. Why do you suppose the word forgive, which represented a tool with which I go inside myself and remove my pain, was changed to pardoning, I'm going to let you off the hook because there's pain in me? Why do you suppose that was changed? I don't know if it was changed to disappear forgiveness from the planet. And it's been disappeared for, you know, my offering is the reason the world is in so much turmoil, the reason the political games are going on, the trauma, the drama, right down to starvation, is because people don't know how to remove the creative energies in themselves with which they are creating their own pain, their own trauma, and contributing that trauma to the world around them. And the next piece of the puzzle, a la Ho'oponopono, is based on the understanding I've just shared. One of the things that I've been working toward now for some time is to eradicate the words, I love you, from the vocabulary of the world. Since love is a state of being, not something that we can do to each other, get from each other, give to each other. What happens is when you utilize the words I love you, you set up an unachievable goal in the mind. That goal leaves the mind with an impossible task, which tends to lead to the deep frustration that so many people experience. And you know, they're just like, oh, I'm not thinking, why? And we've done it to ourselves. And one of the ways that we do that is by setting goals that are unachievable. No one has ever loved you. No one is ever going to love you. You have never loved anyone, and you are never going to love anyone. And the Creator does not love you. Go back and look in the ancient scriptures. It doesn't tell us the Creator loves us. It tells us the Creator is love. Now, Greek misinterpretations turn that around, but our human lives, our very being is the presence of love. It's not something we do. It's what we are. So this error in changing the meaning of the word love from a noun, something that describes who we are, to a verb, something we do, seems rather innocuous, but it results in huge problems in relationships. Yeshua never instructed us to love the Creator or love our neighbor. The instruction he gave was that of was mistakenly translated as love. In Aramaic was have rachma when you think of the Creator or your neighbor. And by so doing, you maintained your own human life, love. So the word there was not love, but rather have rachma. So as a result, I never tell anybody that I love them. In fact, when people say, I love you, I'll oftentimes say, well, I want you to be clear, I don't love you. And then I'll go on and say, because it's not something I can do to you or give to you. I can bring the presence of my being, love to you, to our relationship. I can hold to that space, but I can't accurately use the word love as a verb. So I can offer the truth, that is, that I cherish you, and then the way I fulfill that is by taking responsibility for making sure that I'm living as the presence of love when we interact, maintaining my human life, whatever somebody else does. And the proper use of words is a major key to living a healthy, happy life. So here's my take on the steps in Ho'oponopono in the light of first century Aramaic teachings of Yeshua. One, in gratitude, even in the midst of my conflict, I choose to remember the place in me that is the same as the place in you, where we are creations of love, connected, and are in fact one. In the invisible, indivisible world, we are important parts of each other, and I cherish you. Albert Einstein had a powerful insight in this regard when he said, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. It's time for us to get out of the optical delusion and live as the presence of love. And when we have a challenge doing that, put our effort into living as that presence of love becomes subjective. So step two in the process would be I acknowledge and accept responsibility for my error. I apologize, and both now and in the future, I will focus on correction of my error. I ask for guidance in freeing myself from my error, from my errors, and acting from a state of love toward you. Namaste. Step three, let us join in canceling the goals we hold that drives the pain in either of us so that that pain may be uncovered and undone in us, for us, and for all of our generations. Four, I appreciate and cherish you in my life. So I'd suggest you might look at those four steps in place of the I love you, please forgive me, I'm sorry, and thank you. I hope that fits and helps and makes sense. And beyond that, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Not at the moment, but I did get a response from her after I sent her those links.
Oh,
and I'd also send her the link to where you discussed it on the radio show before. And she says, excuse me, oh my goodness, Michael recorded this message exactly when I needed it. At the end of each sheet, she does the meditation. She says, to strengthen the love in herself and to burn it, quote unquote, to let go of all the flame from the words and the impurities that she had written down on the sheet, her tangled thoughts.
Sweet.
She says, I'm going to go to
good
my
idea.
Forest and cry. She says, I'm going to the forest to cry my good emotions. And I had mentioned to her in the translating to get with Sandy. And excuse me, and talked about.
Did you inhale something,
that,
honey?
I did. Talked about that, you know, when you translate, you can't just translate the words. And she said, yes, I'm fully aware and responsible for the fact that the words in my language should not be, quote unquote, a dry translation, but should fully convey
Sweet.
Phrases that will reach the hearts of the people in this country in this language. I am a fan of Jung and Plato and ancient philosophy. There I have always been looking for support every day. And then here she says, and I forgive Descartes, because when he wrote, I think, therefore I am, he was 20 years old and was seduced by his idea during the Enlightenment. It was a difficult time
yes.
after the medieval head cage in Europe. I'll keep working.
He definitely put the
I'll
cart
give you
before
a sign.
The horse.
Yeah. Says, I will give you a sign when I feel like I'm ready to translate. And she is counting on Sandy's help, love and light.
Sweet. Well, that's awesome. Much appreciation. It'll be fabulous to be able to put that on our website and make it available for anyone that speaks Polish. And by the way, I think we're, what do we have now, 9 or 11 languages on the website, honey? So you can download the free, the Why Is This Happening to Me Again book in any one of, how many?
9 languages.
9?
And
nine
they're
languages.
Not all complete. Some of them are just partials.
In process, right?
Right.
And the way to get to those translations, if you go to our website, whyagain.org, and in the middle page you'll see a picture of the book of Why Is This Happening to Me Again. If you click on that and just drill down through the links, you'll find the translations. You can download in English. Unfortunately, we can't sell you a book because it's out of print. However, if you like to have a physical book in English, it has also been translated into Swedish, but I don't know. We might have one or two copies of it left, but it's as far as I know, out of print now in Swedish. But if you go to the website, click on the book, drill down, you can download in any one of those languages the book free. You can usually find used, we sold enough of them back in the late 1990s, early 2000s, that they're still floating around. So there are usually quite a few used copies for sale on Amazon or on eBay. So please take advantage of it and put it to work. And if you're out there in this land, does any of that... Go ahead, Jeannie.
I was just going to say, you now have a hand up.
Awesome. Well, let's say hello.
I believe that it is Peter. Welcome, 619.
Hello,
welcome, good sir. How are you? Hey.
Great. How are you doing?
Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours again.
Yeah. How do you be? What's happening?
Well, we've known each other for quite a while, 30-plus years, but I did have a question for you.
Great. I'll do my best to answer it.
Well, for some unknown reason, you appear to always answer it correctly for the last 30 years, so my trust in you is high. Here's the question. I related the story of where some relatives stole a bunch of money from me and my wife in the last 2 years,
right.
Six figures.
Ouch.
And yeah, ouch. And you asked me to forgive him.
No. Don't ever put those words in my mouth. I would never ask you to forgive anybody for anything.
No, you're right. I said it wrong. I'm still in the old way. The focus was on the thief. And
right.
I did the worksheets on the thief, and I kind of moved on. However, because of all of these funerals I've been going to, I'm meeting other relatives who have had similar experiences with the thief.
Mm-hmm.
And they were full of anger. I think you may have picked some of that up when we chatted this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
They were full of anger, but none
right.
of them had the losses at our level.
Right.
So I'm leading up to a question. I could have
before you get to the question,
mm-hmm.
let me just throw a thought in to see if we can, for everybody, clarify this idea of forgiveness. In every case where the Greeks translate that the man Yeshua said, forgive your brother or forgive yourself or forgive somebody, each time that those words were translated, there were two words that were missed. And the two words, and I can remember when I first started to confront this idea, it was a little bit difficult for me to get a hold of with my mind. But in Aramaic, let's say somebody's brother has done something, and Yeshua would not say to that person, forgive your brother. He would say, forgive as to your brother. In other words, I interacted with his brother, and they brought something internal inside of me that was painful up with that action. So I may apply pardoning to my brother for what they've done. Gee, what they did was illegal, immoral, off the wall, terrible, awful, evil, whatever descriptors we want to give it. I'm not applying forgiveness to them for what they did, pardoning perhaps, but I'm applying forgiveness I'm forgiving as to what their action brought up in me. And so I can do a worksheet with them as the object of attention, but what I'm working on doing is collapsing the pained perception in myself so that I can get to the root of what that trauma is in me that I'm projecting into my brain's image of that event, and what energetically is part of what invited the event into my space to happen in the first place as a creator. So does that make a little bit of more sense? I think that when the mind gets a hold of that as to, then another level of understanding of the Aramaic forgiveness process comes into view.
Yes, that makes sense. And I kind of felt I worked beyond that. However, because the family members had data, they could contact the FBI and get things done and put things in motion, and I got more data. The money went to pickup
right.
trucks and expensive vacations and et cetera. The money's gone now. And when I tried this 2 years ago, I could have prevented the money from being gone. However, my wife did not want me to pursue because she thought her sister walked on water with her fake ministry. So,
right.
They actually used the name of Jesus to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Double knife in the back. So now I'm mad at my wife because she never let me pursue.
I don't believe you have ever been mad at your wife in your life, but you got some mad in there, and you can sure pretend that it's about your wife, but Peter, it's got nothing to do with your wife. That's your mad. I mean, You had that mad long before you ever met your wife, right?
Yeah, there's a history of not people, but maybe life stealing my stuff.
Yeah.
In there. It's really what I'm mad about.
Mm-hmm. So my offering is you're not really mad about that at all. There's just mad in there, Peter. Remember our definition of denial. Whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, in order to believe that, in order for my mind to produce a construct called perception that documents that I'm mad about what happened out there, I have to hide from myself the real cause of the anger that's inside of me. I have to drive that dis-ease energy deeper into my own unconscious, into my own tissue structure, so that I can really pretend that my anger is about what's happening out there now today. So I have to dissociate when I go into denial, think or speak, as though that's the cause of what's moving in here. I have to literally dissociate from the cause of what's happening inside of me. That's how we create an unconscious mind. And my offering is that an unconscious mind is not natural for us as human beings. We're not designed to have an unconscious mind. We have an unconscious mind because we've been taught to live in denial, to think and speak as though, oh, that made me mad. That's why I'm sad. That's why I'm angry. This is why I'm afraid. And they really peeved me. Now my mind, because my mind is a dedicated servant, a device designed to serve my goals, when I tell my mind they made me mad, I hide the root of my anger from myself and I put it into my brain's image of them. Literally, I project it. You know, the culture talks about projection as taking something that's inside of you and putting it outside of you. Pardon me, but that's not projection at all. That's externalization. When I take something inside of me and pretend it's outside of me, I've externalized it. But projection is when I take, let's say, that anger, and I use that dissociated anger energy to build my brain's image of them. I project that energy from my internal database into my perceptual construct of them. And therefore, I have a picture of them causing my anger. So I really believe it's true, but it's all a fantasy of the mind. Did that progression make sense?
Yes, it does, and it makes me feel like I have some power over this situation if I get out of my head. However, it is still totally 100% real to me right now.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you.
And
remember that forgiveness, you know, a situation like the one you're talking about, when I apply forgiveness to my, let's say I'm enraged, mad about, my mind tells me about what happened, but mad is the energy with which I distort my own mind and my own perception. When I forgive as to that situation and remove my anger, then I'm going to have a much more honest and complete picture of what's going on both inside of me and outside of me. And that's what's going to empower me to step into holding somebody accountable for what they've done. You know, obviously, clearly what they did was illegal and immoral. Very reasonable for you to hold them accountable for that. And I lament with you that that wasn't the step you were able to take because of the interaction between yourself and your wife, that you weren't able to step up at that moment with the clarity to go, okay, we're doing accountability here. But oftentimes it's the very emotion that we project that inhibits us to see how we can rectify things, because that's part of the false reality, the false construct of the mind.
Yes, and so we went through the funerals. Well, it's one funeral. Well, I had two of them in the last month, but
Right.
When this Asian culture, I'll just leave things kind of neutral, their funeral process is four phases. I had to kind of watch and learn.
Right.
There's a phase of denial. And I saw this with the Catholic Italian upbringing, but we did it all in one day, I thought. But here it was 4 days. Catholic denial, complete shutdown after the wailing and flailing, I guess is what the word is. But and then celebration. So at the end, it turned out something quite beautiful. However, we had to host these 50 people during the entire process. And some of them were sharing information, you know, where you walk out on the sidewalk and say, I just wanted you to know, we all know the story.
So, right.
It was a bittersweet period. And I was even told, your wife knows this story. And she has known it. And that's where phase two of anger came in.
Yeah.
How come you didn't tell me so I could take appropriate accountability action? I actually teach accountability with the Department of Defense. Accountability. Who's accountable?
Yeah.
And it just went against my grain.
Yeah. So my invitation would be, and this sounds like probably your next worksheet, would be that you might want to ask yourself why you are blaming her for the fact that you didn't take the action to hold them accountable.
Yeah.
Like, you might want to be accountable for that to yourself.
I stop breathing while I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Which you taught me a long time ago to monitor. So please say the worksheet again.
Yeah, I would say there are probably several different worksheets to do here, but the one I'm in particular, as you talk about accountability, notice that you're not willing to be accountable for the fact that you did not take the action with the thief. You want to put that on your wife.
No, I tried to. I contacted the FBI. I contacted the U.S. government. I contacted immigration. And they said, we need this data. And I went to my wife, can I have this data? And she said, no.
Hmm.
They are on top of a mountain teaching about Jesus in the Philippines. And they were literally in Virginia spending money.
Yeah.
I felt
breathing
like
with you.
Accountability.
Yeah,
but,
that's pretty tough.
I even think there's a deeper core issue here is why am I so gullible in believing people? I'm getting to the point now I don't want to believe in anyone. That's where I'm at. Because...
Are you breathing?
No.
So I'd let you take a breath into that one.
I was raised in a healthy family where I could trust everyone all the time. And I'm 60-plus years old now, and I keep finding cheats and stealers out there. I don't understand why. My brother, who was a cop, who was wonderful, says, you're gullible. That's why.
So if you remember, and I'd invite you at this point, Peter, to go back and redo the videos that we sent you with the personal code evaluation that you did. Watch those again and take a look at your assignments. And if you remember, go back in your mind when you watched that or when we spoke about it. Your balance of honoring others, self, and truth are lower than, oh, wait a minute, let me just look here.
You said they were all equal.
They're all three of them are balanced. That's right. And usually I'm just looking at the whole evaluation to see if we can spot where your most important work would be to get through that one.
Well, it was diet, so to speak.
I'm actually, as I'm looking at your scores, because the honoring of others, self, and truth are in perfect balance, which is pretty rare. I mean, in 40 years of administering that evaluation, I've probably only seen it five times, hundreds of people. And I'm seeing a new piece of it that I hadn't previously recognized, and that is that there's a significantly higher score in your honoring of laws of living, which usually has to do with victimhood. And normally when we see an imbalance between the honoring self and others and then the honoring truth, that's where gullibility comes in. But I'm seeing here that something that I just had not really observed before, and I think, I'm not willing to make 100% commitment to it yet, but I think I'm kind of grasping on a new level that with that high score on honoring laws of living, that would kind of tend to act as a way of keeping in blocking, seeing what should be obvious to the mind, of skewing the mind so that it's not seeing things in full, in their full meaning. And so I would suggest going back, and I know you've been working on those, but making a renewed commitment to the score or the assignments on honoring others, honoring self, and honoring truth. And I suspect when you bring that up, and normally I would say this when there's a differential between honoring self, others, and then where truth is higher, but here it's laws of living that's higher. And so I'd say a new level of commitment to those three assignments on honoring self, others, and truth, and bring it up to the same level as honoring laws of living, and you're going to get rid of that little twist that the mind gives it of gullibility.
Yeah,
how are you doing with your breath right now?
I'm suffocating.
Okay. So joining you in breathing, my friend.
But, yeah. So the work I've been doing for 35 years in America is reading a culture. I can go into a culture, a Walmart, whatever, and say, that guy's going to do this. This will happen here based on the culture. However, when I started teaching in law enforcement, repetitively told by policemen, including my brother who used to be a policeman, who are trained in reading people.
Right.
Boy, you can't read a person at all. Look around this restaurant. What do you see? And I said, a lot of happy people. Culture's good. We're all safe. Now, do you see that guy over there? Do you see this? And the only reason I bring that up is because you mentioned that something, I think you used the word obscure, or used the word, that I can't see that in the person, that I should be able to see.
Right, gullibility.
And the gullibility So it's not one policeman that said I'm gullible. It's a lot of them that said that. Mm. It's like, you love everybody, and that's not safe. And you have to go to the gun range with me. So that's a whole different story. But the point is, I don't know where the gullibility comes from, and that's what I want to get rid of, because I find myself getting hurt by trusting everyone all the time.
So I would offer you ultimately you're going to need to distinguish the difference between, first of all, loving anybody. I don't agree that they're correct that, you know, loving anybody, everybody is dangerous. And the fact that is you can't love anybody anyway. But being love in the presence of everyone is a number one rule for living as a human being. And when I'm in that space of connected love, I'm going to have more contact with truth than I'm going to have if I'm in some form of hostility or fear. And my offering would be to do a renewed level of work on the honoring of self, others, and truth, those challenges on the evaluation. And when you get them up into the arena of or match with the honoring laws of living, then you're going to find that gullibility is going to tend to disappear. It usually comes from having a higher level of honoring truth than it does, than the level at which we honor self and others. That's where the gullibility usually comes in. But as you're sharing this, I'm seeing another aspect of it, which is that when I have an out of balance, and when I say out of balance, I just mean a higher level of honoring laws of living than others, self, and truth, then it will tend to contribute to that gullibility. When I bring them all up into a balance with each other, when I bring those three that are lower into balance with laws of living, then the mind skewing me in the direction of gullibility, that aspect is going to disappear, and I'm going to just be able to see things as they are. That's how you're going to clear that one out.
That makes sense. So the more I reconnect with my true self, the more I'll be able to differentiate what's out there and choose.
Yes. Yes. And from love, I mean, you see the criminal in the criminal act, and from a space of absolute, total connected love, you do what's necessary to hold them accountable for it. You know, I learned that way back, you know, the man who originally inspired us to create the prison course, Laws of Living, was a judge. His name was Asa D. Kelly. And Kelly was a Superior Court judge that was probably the closest person I've ever known to being a saint. This guy was in Albany, Georgia, and if you know the state of Georgia, Albany's been described as a part of the body lower than the armpit. I mean, it's a pretty rough area, pretty rough place. And Kelly, sitting on the bench, I mean, he sent thousands of people to prison for, you know, long, long stretches of time, but he never punished one of them. He always did it out of a connected space of love, and he would explain to them, I mean, some, you know, really heinous backwood type crimes, and he'd explain to them, you know, using the language of the culture, I love you like a brother, but you're not safe in this community, and this community has taken up a collection. This is what he'd actually say to people. This community's taken up a collection and built a building with bars around it and asked me to determine who's safe in the community and who isn't. And because I care for my community, I'm going to sentence you to life in prison because you're not safe in my community. There was no punishment in him whatsoever, and it was out of that space of connectedness and love that Laws of Living grew, that Dan and I really created the Laws of Living course to create a support system for the healing of people who would commit crimes such as that.
Mm.
And, I mean, we cut recidivism in the prison system by over 90%.
Mm-hmm.
The accountability was there. We administered for Judge Kelly what was called a pretrial release program. And Kelly would you know, people who came before him and were adjudicated responsible for a crime, he would turn them over to us. He would ask them if they wanted to do a program of recovery. He'd turn them over to us, and we'd do this evaluation, show them where their blocks were. Kelly would look at that, and depending what the scores were, if the scores were in the right profile, he'd put this person out on pretrial release. If they didn't have the right kind of profile where they would be could be trusted to stay in on the right side of the law, then he'd keep them in jail and sentence them to laws of living. And when their profile shifted to, that showed that they were not likely to commit a crime again, he'd let them out on pretrial release. And he would set up a contract with them. I mean, as a judge, of course, got a lot of power. He would set up a contract. Generally, it was a 3-year contract. And if you sign this contract, I have total power over your life. Basically, I can send a police officer in anytime I want to your home, to your work. You'll surrender to blood tests. Most of them were drug and alcoholics. You'll surrender to blood tests. And, you know, so like for that 3-year period, he had total power over the lives. And if you do this work and your scores on the evaluation reflect it, after 3 years, if you're crime-free, I will expunge your record. And he did that out of caring and concern for the people who, in his community, had committed some pretty heinous crimes. But basically, it was about converting people back to a mind that was connected to love rather than the hostility and fear-based mind that they'd been beaten into as kids and, you know, generationally trapped in, because that's how the family system worked. That's how the culture worked. You know, that's the whole basis of this work, right from the get-go.
That's impressive.
So I suggest going back and redoing those videos with the assignments and getting really clear once again on what the assignment is on honoring self, honoring others, and honoring truth. And really work those three areas and the assignments for them, and that's going to bring your score up into alignment with where your higher score is with honoring laws of living. And I think you'll find that your mind then, gullibility just disappears, and you go, oh, here's what.
Okay.
It's true.
I may call you this week to review this conversation. And
cool.
Where to go exactly. I do know that when I do the work you recommend, it always works quite quickly.
That works. Yeah.
And
well, before you set up a time for us to get together again, before we do another session, what I suggest is watch those videos first with your assignments and really get a handle on those, and then that would make our time in a session most productive.
Okay, so the videos are the ones I got in the email with the results of the test, yes, no?
Right. When you got the results, Jeannie included links, I think, to two different videos that explain the personal code evaluation and what the scoring means and what the assignments are that go with each one. It gave word links and mind shifters and, you know, a whole set of assignments for each area of the evaluation that you had challenges with.
Okay. Final question. So I
go
did this work 35 years ago, and I took off 30 years and did something else, whatever, jogging, running.
Glad you're back.
Is it usual that all this crap is going to pop up as soon as I start this work?
Well, you know, one of the things that I see all the time is people will say, well, you know, I got this challenge, that challenge, physical, what have you, and you know, but life is pretty good. And they live at a level where they keep their vitality down, which means they can keep everything hidden from themselves that they don't deal with. And they do it with junk food, they do it with hostility, and they do it with drugs, and they do it with alcohol. When somebody says, I'm going to go to work now, and makes a commitment, they automatically create an increase in vitality. And then when they actually step in and start to do the things, like drop the things they've been anesthetizing themselves with, and start doing more and more of the things that are on track, then they build vitality. Once you build vitality, then what you've been hiding from yourself is going to start to show up in your physiology, in your emotions, and in your world. And rather than staying hidden, you'll remember in the ancient scriptures, they said, nothing will remain hidden. Everything will be made known in the light of day. It's all going to play out. If you keep lowering your vitality, like most people are in a process of dying. They play the game of, I drug myself, I anesthetize myself, I eat all the junk food I can, I use as much alcohol as I can, or I use drugs in order not to feel, and they are deteriorating physiologically, mentally, and emotionally. Once you start to reverse that, then you start to get to look at what you've been hiding from yourself. It's just part of the healing process. You know, the mind has a built-in suppress mechanism. The mind-body actually has a built-in suppress mechanism. So if I'm, let's say, we've got a vitality meter, and it goes from 1 to 10, and I'm at a level 5 vitality, if I've got a level 6 toxic issue, a level 7, a level 8, a level 9, a level 10, my mind's going to keep that hidden from me. That's not coming to light. It's going to be hidden from me. Because if I were to, let's say, surface and start to move through, let's say, a level 7 toxic situation when I'm only at a level 5 vitality, literally the release of the toxicity of that could physiologically kill me, cancel the thought. So when I start to do my work, you know, I drop off the anesthetics, I start to eat more a cleaner dietary regimen. I do that. I breathe. I do things that make me more vital. I build my vitality. I move from a 5 to a 6, and I say, hey, I'm feeling pretty good. I like this. This is good. I get to a 6.5. Hey, it's getting better every day. Man, I feel great. I get to a 7. This is really, I mean, I'm rocking. And then, you know, I get to a level 7.5, and I'm on top of the world. This is just fabulous. I go to bed at night. I mean, I am flying like a kite. And in the morning, I wonder if anybody got the number of the Mack truck that went through my room during the night, because I'm lower than a snake's belly. What happened? When I hit that level 7.5 vitality, all of the level 7, 6, 5 that I could not deal with previously now is going to be up in my face. You know, it's like the body-mind being says, hey, we got enough vitality to process through this one. Okay, let's let it move. Otherwise, most people are just moving on a downward trend toward death and never get to see that stuff. They just die from it.
This makes total sense. This makes, and we talked when I was in Hawaii for 2 weeks, vacation, that Mack truck that hit me. You just
It's just part of the process.
It took me 3 days to recover from that Mack truck, so to speak.
Yeah, I hear you. And 3 days
and
is about average for most people.
Say again?
I'd say 3 days when something starts to break loose, 3 days is pretty much a norm for people to that are doing their work to move through a set of toxic upheaval that the structure is going through, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, financial, relational. It plays out in any arena.
Yeah, that's what it took me. Well, that has been most beneficial today. We'll catch up again. I didn't mean to take over your radio show, but
this isn't just for you, Peter. This is everybody. I mean, you're not the only one who's benefiting from this conversation. This is all of us. So I'm delighted to spend as much time with as many questions as you have. And, you know, the fact that you're doing your work means that it opens a space for everybody to understand on another level. So that's the purpose of the radio show.
Okay.
That's why we'd be here.
Well, love you, Michael. I'll sign off, and I know you have to close your show. So,
okay, well, I don't believe for a minute that you love me. I don't believe for a minute that you love me, and I'll assure you that I don't love you either, but I am committed to being the space of love in our connection, in our relationship.
What does that mean?
That means that, well, let's go back and think about the first time. Do you remember the first time that you held your newborn daughter?
Yes. And my son, yes, both.
Okay, we'll go back to either of them and remember the moment at which you first held them. Like, actually, you might even physically put your arms in the place where you would be holding that child. Go back to the moment where you held them and tap into the essence of either your son or your daughter or both of them. And what word would you assign to that essence?
Unconditional love.
Okay. Now, again, breathing, holding them, tapping into them, are they loving you or are they love?
Well, they don't know me, so I guess they are love. I don't know.
Yeah.
They are love.
So that's the fact of what human life is. It is love. Now, you'll notice we live in a culture that specializes in beating out of us the awareness that we are love. And then at a certain age, they send us out the front door and say, now, go find somebody to love or go find somebody to love you. And now the cheap and venial copy that the ego has of love, that is approval, becomes the pursuit. Oh, I find somebody that I approve of. I approve of them because they're eye candy to me. I approve of them because they bring up good feelings in me. I approve of them because. But you'll notice that in that circumstance, that when that person violates a goal that's held by the person supposedly loving them, notice how quickly love can turn to disapproval and hate in an instant, because it was never love in the first place. So my support for you and everybody on this show and everybody that I work with and for myself as well is that we each experience ourselves once again as the presence of active love, and we move through the world as love rather than reducing who we are to this venial approval game of I love you that we step into. And the goal then becomes, you know, for me personally, in my own personal process, my primary purpose in that regard is to live in connectedness to who I am as love with any and everybody that I interact with, no matter what they're doing, and to inspire the same in them, and to get rid of this false venial idea that I could possibly love you. I can't love you. You can't love me. Love isn't a verb. It's not something we do to each other. It's what we are. So the goal becomes functioning as who we are rather than playing the game of approval. Oh, if you do what I like you doing, then I'll approve of you. And there you get to understand why Yeshua says you want to be that space of love for anybody that you look at. The most heinous of actors, you want to remember to maintain your own human life in their presence. And if you can't, then the actions they do will show you what it is in you that needs to be forgiven that keeps you out of your eternal presence in your own life as love.
Well, that makes sense.
That makes sense? Cool.
Total sense.
Well, holding the space, my friend.
Holding the space. I love that sentence. So thank you, Doctor.
All right. Take care. Blessings. Everybody, thank you for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings. Bye-bye.